1.6 million acres in Indiana had cover crops on them last year. That, according to research that just came out, we got the information from the Indiana State Department of Agriculture. I'm with Ben Wicker here, Executive Director of the Indiana Ag Nutrient Alliance. And Ben, first off, before we dig into some of the numbers, talk about IANA, what it is you do, what the goals are.
Sure. So the Indiana Ag Nutrient Alliance is a broad partnership of ag, conservation, and other NGO partners that are really looking to empower farmers to make improvements in their nutrient use efficiency, soil health, and ultimately water quality by utilizing those practices on their farms that have been vetted and that we know are going to have a positive impact to improving their farm economics as well as the natural resources around them.
This cover crop conversation, ever since I started kind of in this industry, I keep hearing Indiana's one of the leaders in this space. You can look at these numbers and think, you know what, this is really good. This is great. 1.6 million acres. But then you can look at the amount of actual cropland in Indiana and you think, maybe we've still got a long way to go. Some of the goals that you have set as an organization kind of point to that direction.
Sure. So one of the goals that we have as the Ag Nutrient Alliance, I like to summarize it as, well, let's grow more things more often, because we know that living roots in the soil are always going to be beneficial to improving that soil health, to helping retain those nutrients on the soil and keeping things cycled. So we have goals around increasing the amount of what we call living green cover. So that can be cover crops, that can be diversified rotation moving forward. And so 1.6 million acres of living green cover in Indiana over the past year, is a tremendous accomplishment and continues to seat Indiana, at the top of the nation in terms of the percentage of our acres that are utilizing that practice. But we know that there's still space and there's still areas that can continue to see benefit from increased adoption of those. And we continue to look for opportunities and avenues that can help make sense on more Indiana farms, whether that's through an increase in programs, increase in economic opportunities, improved research to show what the benefits of those practices can be.
You mentioned economic opportunities. That's really kind of the hang up for a lot of producers, right? It's the economic impact. What kind of ROI am I going to see in year one? But this isn't really an ROI in year one type of endeavor.
Right. And that's one of the long-term system change challenges that we see when adopting cover crops, is that the parallel I like to equate it to is on our farm, when we've planted alfalfa in the past, that's a three-year investment at least typically. And when we take that field out of alfalfa, right, we see, a great bump in production in those following years, not just in year one where we see the benefit, but extending out over that period of time. Thinking about utilizing cover crops with similar goals, right, of how can we improve the tilth and the health of that soil over the long term, but we know that's not going to happen just in a single year. And so that's where giving farmers the tools that help mitigate the risk of losses and having good technical assistance out there to understand how can I manage this in a way that's not going to cause me, certainly yield losses in those years where we're continuing to build that health up. But then, what are the other resources that are going to allow me to do this consistently over a longer period of time to accomplish those changes in that soil that's going to lead to that improved productivity and improved soil health that I'm looking for?
And I think that the evidence, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but folks that are in this space, folks that are doing cover crops, the no-till, these soil health practices, they're unbelievably passionate about it. And the ones that have seen the success have tried so many things and done so many things over the years, and they're deep into this process now. That's ultimately where we just kind of need to get some more people, is to get past that initial bump so that maybe they could be just as passionate about it.
Sure, there are absolutely a great number of tremendous advocates and folks that have experience in this space here in Indiana, that, you know, have seen those benefits, see what those long-term effects of these practices can be. But you're exactly right. You know, if you're just starting out in this space, you know, you want to make sure that you're doing that in an informed way, and working with some of those folks, right, too, and asking questions and looking for those resources that can help you figure out what helped make them successful? How did they manage that interim time, right? And transitional time that allowed them to become successful and really figure out how these systems work and make it go. And I think, you know, farmers can find that in a couple different ways, whether that's, you know, looking for, you know, a local agronomist or another technical service provider in their area that has experience in this space that can help kind of coach and guide them. It might be a neighboring farmer or a farmer, you know, that you get connected with, you know, that can help share, you know, this is what I did, this is how I got started, and this is how I, you know, really manage that risk of changing these practices on my farm.
Ben, last one here. How do we continue to move the needle here? What's the next step? Obviously, you know, 1.6 million acres this year. I don't know what the goal would be. You know, how much of a percentage jump do you want to go? But how do you get to that next level here? What needs to happen?
Yeah, I think, you know, continuing to move down this road, you know, is starting with, you know, farmers being interested or being willing to try something new and to test some of these practices and figure out ways, you know, that they can integrate these into their system. But to go right along with that, they can't just do that alone. They're going to need, you know, that agronomic support. They're going to need, in a lot of cases, perhaps even some financial support through cost share and other programs that's going to allow them to adopt this. And then really getting that localized recommendation that says, you know, this is going to be, you know, the right species planted at this time in this particular field, in your particular cropping system, in order to make that work.
The guys that are farming, you know, 3, 4, 5,000 acres, you can't just do all of this at once, because it's a systems change, right? It takes some time, and then it takes some more time, and then it takes some more time, but all for the overall good.
Right, and I encourage folks, when they're looking at any practice change, whether that's cover crop, making a change, you know, to your nitrogen management program, you know, we tend to sometimes think about some of these practices and hold them out differently than other practices that we may be adopting on our farm. But in reality, you know, anytime we make a change to our cropping system, you know, we're going to be making that system change. And so it's just thinking about it on equal footing of whether I'm, you know, shifting from anhydrous ammonia to 28% to, you know, adding a cover crop into my system, or, you know, changing my tillage practices. All these changes are going to require some shifts within your system, and understanding and recognizing, you know, what that is going to take and how I'm going to manage that risk moving forward. You know, think about those in the same light, regardless of what that system change you're looking to make is.
Ben, thank you for joining us on Hoosier Ag Today. Thank you for coming to speak to our Ag Leadership Program class here with the Ag Institute. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Appreciate the time.